Have you been hitting the books and listening to lectures all day? It's time to relax, to unwind, and listen up. This is Brooke from Campus Chronicles, your go-to podcast for everything student life. No matter where you are in your academic journey, we have you covered. Think of us as a trusted mentor, friend, and confidant who always has your back. We'll be sharing inspiring stories, thought-provoking insights, and practical advice to help you succeed in and out of the classroom. So get ready to be inspired, enlightened, and entertained. Hello, hello, everyone. I am so incredibly excited to introduce you to our next guest. Her name is Rebecca Berry. Her pronouns are she, her, and she is a wonderful woman who is so passionate about the world of inclusion. Rebecca, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for inviting me, Brooke. I'm excited to be here.
I'm excited to learn from you. We've had a brief conversation before, and Rebecca is full of so much wisdom and so much gems. But before we get there, give us a little bit of insight into who Rebecca Berry is, and then we'll dive into the really tough questions.
Sure. I live in Oxford with my mum. I'm a full-time carer for my mum, and I'm a butler to my two cats. And I am in my middle age. I'm a white, privileged woman. And I've spent the last 5 or 10 years focusing on corporate culture and more recently on diversity and inclusion, which has kind of focused down to just inclusion for me. Because I think if you get inclusion right at work or at home or in social locations, if you're getting inclusion right, then the diversity will follow. So I've been in big corporate roles, in big corporate global roles. But for the last couple of years, as I said, I've been caring for my mum who has Parkinson's disease and probably doesn't have too much longer to live. So I'm enjoying every second I can spend with her.
Well, thank you for doing that. And I think it's wonderful that she has you. I love that you started to focus on the inclusion because I'm very similar to you. I believe that inclusion goes first. If you had to describe inclusion in the way that you see it, because we all see inclusion differently, how do you visualize and view inclusion?
Inclusion is shown, well, you see inclusion when everybody is thriving. It's as simple as that for me. Again, in whether it's work or a social or even a family situation, if everybody is thriving in that situation, then there is an inclusive environment where everybody feels able to be themselves and feels valued and appreciated for what they do and what they contribute to that group.
Mm-hmm. And inclusion is not about people surviving. It's about people thriving. And I love that you make that distinction.
Yes, exactly that. Well, you made it, to be fair, and it's an excellent one. And so many people are surviving and bending themselves out of shape to fit in and feel frightened or just have given up trying to find a way to navigate being themselves. So they're masking every day and they're tired and they don't feel safe, they don't feel valued, and that in itself, for me, we're missing out on so much in terms of people's creativity and contribution and just happiness in the world. Now, in the UK, we recently came in as one of the unhappiest countries in the world. And I put that down, well, firstly to Brexit, but then to inclusion, because it's turning into such a polarized country. So, yeah, and you can see that when you interact with people. And I think it's so sad because it could be so different.
And I think you're right. When someone is using all of their emotional resources and all of their emotional energy to make themselves, you know, likable, to make themselves marketable to a broader sense of society, they are not using that emotional creativity and that emotional reservoir to create what they were meant to create. And so we do miss out.
Exactly. Yes, we do.
So I know you have a lot of different, you know, parts and components of your work, but one of those that you feel really, really passionate about is racism as well as LGBTQ inclusion. Why those?
Why those? because they're ones that have touched me personally, not being the target of racism or the target of homophobia or transphobia, but because I know people and I care about people who have been in those situations. It doesn't mean that I'm not interested in other forms of exclusion, for want of a better word. My passion, though, is anti-racism and pro-LGBTQIA+. And the anti-racism came about, like a lot of people, in the summer of 2020 when George Floyd was murdered. I saw all the marches and it just felt like a moment, and that turned into a movement, of course. And I took the opportunity to really question myself and to really try to understand racism, because at that time I was doing a diversity and inclusion role and I thought I understood racism. And then I worked through a book called Me and White Supremacy by Leila F. Saad, and it's a 28-day journaling program, and every day there's a little bit of input from the author, and then there's some journaling questions to ask yourself about. And it was probably the hardest thing I've ever done in terms of suddenly realizing, getting, you know, even a tiny fraction of, my goodness, this is what racism is, and I have been complicit in it my whole life. And at that stage, I didn't know many people who were doing the same thing. They were following the news. They were expressing all the right things, you know, the black squares on the social media and all of that. But it took me such a long time to navigate my way through that, because it literally turned my world upside down, my self-identity, my belief system, all of that. And I had nobody to talk to about it. I had woefully few black friends and colleagues at that point, and I was unable to articulate then what I can articulate now. And the few attempts I had to try and talk about it, I made an absolute fool of myself, and I caused more damage by making it all about me. You know, I feel so bad. I've been doing the work, and it was, you know, all my fragility, and it was all my guilt, and it was all about me and not about that person, me reaching out and saying, how is it for you? And, you know, how can I support you? And when I spoke to my white friends about it, I was saying, I feel so bad, and I don't know how to make sense of all this new stuff that's going around my head. And they were all saying, oh, well, you're doing loads more than anybody else is, so be kind to yourself. You know, it's great what you're doing, but I knew it wasn't. So it took me about, I would say, 3 or 4 months to really get to a stage where I could talk about it. And one of the things that I like to do now when I'm coaching people around creating an inclusive mindset is to try and accelerate that for them, so that they can express, you know, when their eyes are opened and they think, wow, this is a game changer, this is a life changer, I will never be the same again. They're not in the kind of desert that I was to try and make sense of it all. So I can help them much faster on that journey. And I've continued with that work. I've appeared as a panelist on anti-racism panels. And one of the things I've been trying to get across in my work, in the blogs that I write and the coaching that I do and the workshops that I run, is that the goal of doing the work of anti-racism is not to become non-racist. It's to realize and acknowledge and own our racism and do something about it. Because I know that people will say, well, it wasn't our fault. The slave trade was hundreds of years ago. And no, it's not our fault, but it is our responsibility to put it right. So I'm sure that how passionate I am about anti-racism, but that's where the anti-racism passion came from. And I have some great friends of all different heritages now, which I feel much easier talking to and understanding, and not being quite so white.
How do you think racism and sexism / gender intersect? Is there an intersection, and how do you view that?
There is an intersection, and I've been to a number of events, and I'm just thinking about one which is really embarrassing. I went to an event which was launching a report about how feminism has benefited white women at the expense of black women. Not we've left black women behind, but black women are even worse off because white women have had more opportunities and they have not been supporting their black sisters in having those same opportunities. And I went to a launch event for this, and I was, I think, one of a handful of white women in a huge hall of about 200 or 300 black women. And here's an example of interrupting my thought patterns. I thought, gosh, this must be how it feels to be in a minority. And then thought, oh my goodness me, you stop right there, because I'm afraid this tiny experience doesn't give you any insight at all into how you live this on a daily basis. And then when we were called into the hall to see the research and to hear the speakers, I just kind of wandered in and sat down and turned my phone on silent and all of that, and then realized that I had unconsciously sat down next to one of the very few white women in that hall. Hadn't even thought about it. My feet had taken me, and that event, I can't remember the name of the research. If I can find it, I will send it to you. But that was an event where it showed clearly that sexism is kind of, you know, a double jeopardy for black women in the workplace. And the intersectionality can build up and build up. And this is where inclusion is so important, because people need to thrive in all of their identities. You can't kind of thrive in one and not in another. That's not thriving. So I think, yes, sexism, another thing for white women to be acutely aware of. And there's another book that really hit me between the eyes, which is by two American women, Regina Jackson and Syra Rao. It's called White Women, Everything You Already Know About Your Own Racism and How to Do Better. And it talks about how in women in general pit ourselves against each other. We're always competing. We've always got to be the prettiest, the thinnest, the most, you know, the best mum, the best president, the best this, the best that. And the more I read that, the more I uncomfortably recognized a lot of stuff and thought, why do we do this to each other? I just don't understand it. So, and I know that Syra and Regina do dinners in the United States. They came over to the UK in July last year, where they will ask a white woman to host a dinner party with Syra and Regina, and they talk about racism. And there's a very interesting documentary that they made that's on Netflix about the experience of doing that and the experience of, you know, the kind of warm, homely people like me, really, going, can't we all just get along? People who don't want to face up to it. So that's a brilliant example of white women putting themselves above black women.
In one of our initial conversations, Rebecca, we had a discussion. One of my dear friends has done a documentary about colorism, and I don't think that we discuss that enough either. Talk about the colorism intersection as well, if you feel comfortable.
Yes. And I apologize, I have not yet watched that documentary.
It's a long documentary, but it's a good one. And it focuses on Southeast Asia, but colorism is everywhere.
Yes. And, you know, when I've been to the Middle East and to the, you know, to India and places like that, I was struck with the number of skincare adverts for skin lightening cream. And it made me very sad, because it's not right that, you know, the Western ideology of white perfection is not correct. And everybody feels as though they, you know, the whiter they are, the more successful they'll be. I mean, there's this notion of white passing women. So women who have black heritage, but look and are accepted as white. And then there are women, you know, from sub-Saharan Africa heritage, you know, with very dark skin, who have the hardest time getting on. Again, it's something that you read about and look at and feel helpless to do anything about. And with that, as with all kinds of inclusion, really, it's about speaking up and saying something when it comes up. Although I think colorism in particular is quite an invidious one. It's very subtle. It's harder to pick up. In my circle, it's harder to pick up than outright racism. But calling things out is the way that we can contribute to raising awareness and to having other people who are just not in an aggressive way. I prefer to call people in than call them out, unless it is it's clearly somebody who is extremely racist, in which case that's a different conversation. But again, it's about stopping them in their thought patterns. So saying, what makes you say that? If somebody says, she's darker than her, or she's too dark for that, or blah, 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 whatever. And I do this with anything that I'm calling out from an inclusion point of view. I just say in a tone of curiosity, what makes you say that? And the person may immediately realize that, oh, yeah, that was a really racist thing to say. Or they will be, and they'll get defensive, or they'll go, thank you for calling me out, or whatever. Or they'll genuinely be, I don't know why, what. And then there's an opportunity to educate and to help them to see it from a different point of view. So I'm rambling, sorry.
No, you're not at all rambling. And you're making me think. I come from an entertainment industry background, from a broadcasting/pageant background. Colorism is very rampant in that background. I can think of a lot of instances on a lot of different levels where I've seen stuff like that happen, but you're right to say that it is more subtle. It is. And so regarding really colorism, sexism, anything, we're speaking to our university students here who have the opportunity to learn in a way that they've never learned before. And that doesn't just mean spending hours hunched over a textbook. That means broadening their worldview. What are the types of advices and things that you would say to them?
I would say that I think the current generation of students is already more open to thinking inclusively. I saw some research which showed that in my age, I'm 54, people of my age, some more than 90% of us would say that we're heterosexual, whereas I think something like 65% of the current generation of 20-somethings, of Gen Z, would say that they are. And far more people are likely to be interested in exploring their sexuality and gender fluidity, and to not accept the binary concept of, you know, male, female, heterosexual, whatever. I think that's great. And I think that people are more open to hearing the lived experiences of others. I think while social media has had, you know, some very negative impacts on society, I think it's also done a lot to promote these really important conversations. And, you know, my daughter is 25 and she's so much wiser than I was at that age about identity difference and being able to talk about it in a way that is sort of open and natural, in the way that kids at school will talk to each other. Whereas I've had to learn how to do that. So I think this generation of students probably already has a head start. So the advice really is to stay curious, to not see a difference of opinion as, again, a black and white thing. I'm right, you're wrong. And that reminds me that one of the first things that I really tried to do and to let go of was to let go of being right. When I'm thinking about my worldview and the way I think the world is and the world should be, to recognize that that's just my worldview. It isn't right. It isn't wrong. It's just my worldview. So letting go of the need to be right and being open and willing to hear other people's experience and having the courage to say, you know, tell me about yourself. You know, I know that in the UK, there can be issues with people going, oh, you're black. Where do you come from? And that, well, I'm British. Yes, but where do you come from originally? You know, that age old thing. And the question is, just tell me about yourself. And then people can talk about the aspects of their identity that they want to share. And when you know somebody better, you can say to them, so what has your experience of racism, experience of colorism been? Without expecting people to educate us. If they're comfortable talking about it, great. But we don't have the right to say, well, you know, if you want us all to be anti-racist, you're going to have to, you know, be prepared to tell us about what it's like and educate us. As a white woman, it's my responsibility to educate myself. But I might use that education to ask a friend in a way that's supporting him or her to say, I've been reading about this. What's your experience of that been like, if you don't mind my asking? And they might say, actually, I don't want to talk about that. Or they might say, well, yeah, it's been this and this and this. And then I've understood more and I know better how to support them if they need it.
What is something that a young person can do every day or perhaps once a week to educate themselves? Do you recommend specific resources or specific times of reflection?
Journaling is always great, but I like the idea of specific times of reflection. I would say that it's a good idea to maybe find a website or get the book I talked about, Me and White Supremacy, to have something every day, just a little thing that you're thinking about. And that, again, we could go back to the news. That exercise on the news, being curious and thinking, what is it about my worldview and the way I've been brought up that's making me either agree or disagree with what this person's saying? What is it about this person that's making me like them, dislike them, and is that real? So to lean into inclusion, you really need to understand yourself and to accept that I don't have all the answers. We don't have all the answers. So it's the more you do it, the more it becomes a natural thing that you will automatically question or hold lightly an opinion. But if you have a reminder every day or every week to look at the world in a curious way and maybe to read something, if you read something that you feel really drawn to and something that you think, yeah, I really agree with this. And this is something that I do about with the conversation about transgender issues. Much as I hate it, reading stuff about people who are anti-transgender, because I need to understand every part of the argument so that I can have better conversations with people who are usually got one or two, I'm using quotation marks here, facts about it. So I'm able to converse with them at a deeper level because I already know what their argument is. So it's understanding all the points of view in a particular topic so that you can have a better conversation about it.
What do you want to leave our viewership and our audience with in terms of all of the complex things that we have discussed? What little tangible, actionable piece of advice do you want to leave them with that they can start working on today?
One thing is to question your reactions. Interrogate yourself as to why you're reacting in that way. So interrupt your thought patterns and look for racist patterns, because they will be there. They're there for everybody. Sexist patterns, and read. Just read widely. Follow something that can do straight away is to follow far more diverse voices on socials, whatever their favorite socials are, and hold your opinions lightly. Let go of the need to be right.
I love that, Rebecca. I feel that I've learned from you today. Thank you so much for being here and for being willing to do the work for yourself and to share that work with us. We really do appreciate it.
It's my pleasure. Thank you so much for inviting me, Brooke. I've really enjoyed our conversation.
Thank you for joining me on Campus Chronicles. I hope you found our discussion informative, inspiring, entertaining, and fun. We are always working hard to make sure that our episodes are the very best they can be, which means we need your help. If you liked what you heard, remember to hit the follow button on your favorite podcast platform and drop us a review. It helps us to connect with more students who are hungry for success. And remember, the journey never stops. Keep listening, keep learning, keep growing. See you next week for another amazing episode of Campus Chronicles.